Over the past few months, many of my business meetings at school have moved to being online, as many people are working from home. Conversations that I would normally have with contractors and consultants and colleagues at other educational establishments have had to be rescheduled to accommodate demands for homeschooling. It's not hard to tell when I ring whether my call is interrupting a tense moment of parental teaching or it is a moment of great relief to return to an adult dialogue and away from a struggling learning environment. And I've heard a number of people say how much they now admire the teaching profession. When I think of teachers, I don't think of people who are particularly powerful, at least not by worldly standards. I think of Mrs. Summers, who helped me to have the confidence to read aloud when I would do anything to avoid it. I think of Mr. Bradbrook, who introduced me to the Jurassic coastline and made learning geography such fun. He travelled the world and loved everything he'd seen, and it was infectious. I think of Mrs. Rossiter, who helped me make a replacement Swiss roll after school one night when my own one looked rather like a pile of soggy cardboard and she knew I was disappointed. I think of teachers like these and I'm amazed at the impact they've had on my life and the lives of so many other students. I'm amazed at the way good teachers continue to feed us when long after we've met in their presence. Many spent long hours in school and they had to deal with some children they didn't want to learn. I can remember a few of those myself. Most teachers won't ever be famous, yet what power they have. But I also had some lousy teachers. At university, my lecturer in accounting would stand right in front of the overhead projector, that shows my age. Unless he was wearing a white shirt, you couldn't really see what the notes were to take. Teachers are powerful. They can change lives. They have the power to nurture and develop young lives. Our reading today focuses around the world of powerful teachers. It is early in the ministry of Jesus in the Gospel of Mark. It is at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, which begins with teaching. But not just any kind of teaching. It is teaching unlike that of the scribes. It is teaching with authority. And we all live with authority, whether supervisors, teachers, parents, or the police. And depending on how that authority is exercised, either we feel put upon, trapped and used, or we feel secure, free and useful. I think it's interesting that we don't hear the content of Jesus' teaching. It is almost like Mark is saying, the content isn't the important part here. In the Gospel of Mark, what makes Jesus' teaching authoritative is his person. His teaching is authoritative because of who he is. He is the Holy One of God. It's like those teachers, those good teachers in our past. We don't remember necessarily the detail of what they taught as much as we remember the power of their person. Understandably, the people contrast Jesus' teaching with what they know and have experienced against the teaching of the scribes. And unlike the scribes, the people perceive Jesus to teach with authority. Jesus has something the scribes do not. In the passage, Jesus heals a man with an unclean spirit. And in the Gospel of Mark, there is no differentiation between Jesus' teaching and his healing. It is all part of the same package. So when the people hear Jesus teach with authority and see Jesus heal with authority, they are astounded and amazed because this is something new. This is not at all what they have experienced with the scribes. This teacher is different. In today's world, we often use the words power and authority interchangeably. However, there is a distinction between the two. And if we look into the world in which Jesus lived, the scribes, along with the Pharisees and the Sadducees, had the power. They were the interpreters of the law. They decided what and who was acceptable and what and who was not acceptable. They were part of the cultural power structure of the day. Their power was simply a given, but they did not necessarily have the support or confidence of the people, so they lacked authority. Dictators may be powerful because they have an army behind them, but they lack genuine authority in the hearts and minds of the people. I recall Sarah Malady referring to the apartheid government as having had the power in South Africa for many years, but a jailed man named Nelson Mandela having had the authority. It is a similar situation with the scribes. They are often presented in the Gospels as oppressors of the people who lack a genuine understanding of the law and who possess no understanding of grace. In other words, they are poor teachers, but they are still powerful because of their position in society. They may be lousy teachers, but they still get to call the shots. It seems to me that genuine authority comes from one's position in society. Not from one's position in society, but from somewhere beyond oneself. Authority is embedded through a sense of call. Good teachers, for example, have authority, teaching is authoritative because of their God-given gifts, because God has called them to be teachers. Good teachers are teachers for the right reasons. They teach not for the money and not for the prestige. They teach because they're called, because it is those who are, they are there as compassionate, they're caring, they're gracious people. And it is those God-given, God-blessed aspects of their person that gives their teaching the authority. Have power does not necessarily mean one has authority. Think about our state of lockdown and the tier system when it was introduced. People were not asking whether our government had the power to do certain things. Of course they have the power, but they were asking, does our government have the authority to do it? The opposite is true as well. Just because someone has authority does not necessarily mean they have power. Jesus had the authority, but in the end, it was the scribes and the Pharisees that had the power to call for his crucifixion. Authority, in the best sense of the word, is persuasive. It does not need, nor does it depend on, threats of force. People gravitate towards genuine authority because it is persuasive, because it speaks to the heart, because genuine authority is recognized as being different. It is recognized as having come from above. Here we see that Jesus is different from the scribes because he is said to teach with authority. His authority comes from above. Rightly identified the demon as the Holy One of God. And Jesus' authority is a derived authority. It comes directly from God. And it is this divine authority that we see unfold in the Gospel of Mark. It is this divine authority that is being critiqued constantly by those in power because they feel threatened by it. It is this divine authority that is constantly being challenged because they fear losing their power. And of course, they're right to feel threatened and afraid, because it is Jesus' divine authority that ultimately trumps all worldly powers. I was trying to mention a sermon without mentioning Trump when I was talking about power. We are given a clue about just how all-encompassing Jesus' divine authority is when he heals the demon-possessed man. Talk of spirit and demons perhaps seems primitive and makes us feel uncomfortable today. It's the stuff of horror movies. However, this exorcism as an example of Jesus' overcoming evil in the world. And this is what astounds the people. Jesus has the authority to overcome evil. What other power or authority is there that can overcome evil? Eradicate it. Make it go away. We put people in prison, but that doesn't make evil go away. Or, more close to home, how many of us struggle with the presence of evil in our own lives? Do we have the power or authority on our own just to make that evil go away? I read of a Native American story about a chief instructing his warriors about the struggle within. "It is like two dogs fighting inside of you," the chief told them. "There is one good dog who wants to do the right, and the other dog wants to do the wrong. Sometimes the good dog seems stronger and is winning the fight, but sometimes the bad dog is stronger and wrong is winning the fight." "Who is going to win in the end?" asked the young warrior. "The one you feed," the chief answered wisely. The only food available to feed the good dog within us comes from above. It comes from outside of us. It is the food of hope and grace, whose nutritional authority comes from God. We do not have the power to overcome evil on our own. In fact, left to our own devices, we will choose evil more often than good. Beginning of most of our services at Christ Church, we begin with a prayer of confession. We know all too well our own capacity for evil and for our own need for forgiveness. We are perpetually astounded by the food of hope and grace. It's here that we meet the Holy One of God, who has the authority to call evil out of us, to forgive us and transform us. It is here that we are fed on the scriptures, read, proclaimed and taught. It is here that we are nourished by our fellowship that makes us one and transforms us at the same time. May we follow Jesus' example and be given the authority to speak and live and heal in ways that feed a hungry world.